Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. Walking around Hampstead on a route determined by the throw of a dice, I chat to Idit Nathan. Idit was brought up in Israel in the 60s, with childhood memories of playing in the streets of Jerusalem either side of the Six-Day War. This has influenced her thinking and actions on how she, her children, and all of us can and might play the city. Recently, she's exhibited and presented work in galleries based on documenting seven walks through Jerusalem and an adaptation of a Monopoly game that she calls Hegemonopoly, in which you can win power to control the movement of others. Believing that playfully limiting a walk often generates creativity and unexpected encounters, she's worked with fellow artist Helen Stratford as Play the City Now or Never to develop an app which will disrupt people's movements through the city to reclaim some of its spaces through play.
Okay, so you'd like me to throw the dice, or should you be throwing the dice?
I'm happy to throw it.
And are you happy for it to drop on the ground here?
Yes.
Okay, and perhaps while we're about to throw it,
yep,
you can explain why you have a dice in a little yellow bag.
Yes, well, I've got a dice with words on it. We'll see the words in a minute. The yellow bag says walk anywhere, anytime on it. And I just produced these for the exhibition that's on now at Standpoint Gallery. So I've got a show there which is called Footnotes Playing Dead, which is a combination of more or less seven years of work to do with play and conflict. Two or three of the pieces in it relate to walking, specifically to the project I did in Jerusalem in 2011, where I decided to walk in Jerusalem for seven walks. The original idea was to collect images for postcards. I thought it was going to be a postcard art type project. I was interested in the conflict and the pilgrimage and the tourism and how they all blend together and ordinary life, you know, which is something I grew up in Jerusalem, and that mixture always fascinated me.
And not so ordinary life either, is it?
Well,
it's almost the acceptance of the extraordinary being ordinary.
Yes, and then when you're a child, this is what is ordinary, so, you know, you don't think of it as extraordinary. As you grow up, you realize that it is a completely extraordinary place. So that mixture interested me, and I thought I was going to produce postcards. I suppose the idea was to avoid using the familiar routes. I decided to disrupt them and sort of toss them up and see where it lands. And I did that by devising a whole set of cards and dice that I used throughout the walks. So each walk started from one of the gates of the old city. I decided on seven walks and then discovered that there were seven gates. So each walk started from one of the gates, and I discovered in the morning which one it was by opening a card up, you know, just revealing the card. There were dice to dictate the directions I would walk in.
So each face of the dice had a left, right,
that's
straight
right,
on,
yes,
backwards.
And a joker.
And a joker,
yes.
Which meant that you could...
I could do what I wanted,
okay.
Which is great. At times it was a real savior.
Over what period of time did you...
A couple of weeks.
And did you say, OK, I'm going to walk for 2 or 3 hours, or did you just walk till you got to a dead end?
Well, no, I decided very early on that I was going to, in keeping with the seven, do the first one for an hour, the second one for 2 hours, and then up to 7 hours. So the last one was 7 hours.
Wow. And you did these unaccompanied, or did you do these with friends? Or
mostly unaccompanied, and on one or two occasions people joined me. My mother joined me for the three-hour walk, and a friend joined me on the seven-hour walk. And throughout the walks I had someone filming me. So that's one of the things in the exhibition now, is a film called Seven Walks in 28 Minutes. So yeah, the idea with those dice and there were cards for themes was to change the way I looked and experienced the city because I know it so well.
And was the idea also to engage with people as you walked? Or not so much, necessarily?
Not so much. I was pretty sort of...
focused on your
focused own... Focused on what I had to do. I wanted to collect the images, really. That was the main aim.
Because the idea eventually was to publish something as postcards.
Yeah, that's right. And there is, in fact, now an edition of 49 images, 7 from each walk, which are curated thematically. So the first walk was coloured. So there are 7 images where the colour is the sort of focus. Each walk had a different theme.
Okay, so this was in 2011?
Yes, that's right.
And that was to mark already 7 years of work.
Yeah, more or less.
Now, there are two things, obviously, immediately. We haven't thrown the die.
No.
We're talking. We're going. One. But two, there's also this, my interest in as much about the playfulness of the city. So was that something you wanted to sort of seek out on those 7 walks in the Holy City? Or what was the kind of driving force behind the 7 walks? Was it reclaiming the area, rediscovering it?
It was rediscovering it and seeing whether or not one can walk for 28 hours and not notice the conflict or not notice, you know, the fact that it's contested. And, yeah, which, of course, was doomed to fail. I sort of knew the answer before I started. But, yeah, the idea was to sort of relook at it and find a way to discover places I wouldn't otherwise get to and see what they would bring up. So I blogged about each of the walks. And the comments were quite striking. And once they started coming in, it sort of... the project got its own drive, if you like.
And made you start thinking in different ways? Observing in different ways?
I suppose, yeah, or feeling more sort of at liberty to actually annotate things and, you know.
So it built almost your confidence
being
a lone walker in your own city.
I didn't feel alone after the first one or two because I knew that people would be reading the reports. Yeah, so it became a very different, much more public project than I intended it or thought it would be.
We're still not throwing the dice.
No. That's interesting.
Untitled.
Yes. So these are basically 6 out of the 7 themes that I used for the walks, the 7 walks. And I kept them because they were, you know, the most interesting, I suppose. So okay. Untitled is interesting because...
So it could be any walk or image or... So, well, let's try Untitled.
Well, for me, it was especially in the context of Jerusalem, but even now when we're walking here, it's about who has the title. I mean, I discovered, because English is my second language, I often look things up. I look the words up in the dictionary or, you know, or thesaurus or whatever. So for me, this is interesting in relation to public spaces because it's who's entitled and who has the title to be, you know, allowed to be here but not here.
Yes.
Where we're standing, you know. So somebody has decided that this path has to have, what's that, a banister? Or?
Yeah, it is a railing, isn't
it?
It's more like a banister. More like a banister.
Okay. Which immediately says you're not supposed to walk over there.
Or it could be there just to help you up the slope, because we are climbing a slope.
Yes. Yes, I'm sure that there's health and safety reasons behind it.
Courtesy.
And that, and I'm sure that, you know, yeah, care, you know, sort of health and safety in the sense of looking after, you know, wanting people to sort of be able to enjoy a space.
This is good too because now we're just getting and we're hearing children's voices in the background, and that is an area which is about Untitled. Also, is the children's right to roam. So maybe tell us a little bit about your interest in playfulness in conflict. Are there connections with your own childhood, or am I jumping the gun a bit?
I grew up in a very feral space in Jerusalem in the early 60s or mid-60s, just before the Six-Day War and after the Six-Day War, and on the border. So for me, memories of play, the earliest memories I have of play are memories of, you know, just before it turned into a battlefield and just after, because while it was a battlefield, we were sitting in a shelter.
Obviously no play.
Yeah, no. Well, plenty of play, but it was dark and, you know, it involved buckets of bodily fluids, and we won't get into that. It was a very confined space and a very sort of unpleasant experience. After that, you know, the border which used to be there moved and was never seen again, and we had much more freedom to sort of run around. I don't remember a sense of danger. I do remember a sense of sort of appropriating and using everything we could find and lay our hands on. Anything turned into a plaything. So going back to this banister, I would be curious about how many kids would actually use
this banister.
Swing on this,
walk down it, run in and out
and
of it.
My guess is not many.
Not at the moment.
Because, and my worry, I suppose, is that, because we don't have these feral spaces anymore for children, they go out, they get out of the habit of experimenting.
When you talk about feral spaces, is that, it's just as much a sort of social norm, isn't it, as opposed to the physical environment?
Yes, it's
here,
both, because we
were
allowed
to. There are lots of people here will be saying, oh, well, we wouldn't encourage our children to stray further than a certain distance.
I think that's an essential, for me, at least, or in my formative years and the way I try to bring up my children, it's as important as the boundaries and the rules and regulations that frame the feral space, because a feral space doesn't have to be some place, you know, wild entirely.
The experiences you had as a child have certainly sparked your interest in looking at contested spaces and who has the right to use what parts of the city. Is that, or am I putting words in your mouth?
No, I think so, definitely. I mean, these things happen organically, so, you know, it's only in recent months or the last year or so that I've become sort of more aware of it as being so, you know, such an informative part of what I do or how I think about places and spaces. But yeah, definitely. It's those memories and that sort of ethos behind it that made me, I suppose, more aware.
You're actually doing a PhD, which is researching...
Yes, the links between play and conflict. So now, it's a very big area.
That conflict is conflict...
Israel and Palestine.
Is that specific, or is it conflict per se, or conflict in the family? It's broader than that. It's conflict.
No, I'm looking very specifically at Israel-Palestine as a conflict zone. So that's a place where there's ongoing conflict. So it's not just one military campaign or another. It's decades of ongoing contested sort of reality, if you like, or and colonization and, you know, resistance to that and etc. And I'm just looking at different types of play and only in artworks. So I'm not looking at children's playgrounds, for example.
No.
Interesting though it is. I'm looking at artworks that have a specific sort of type of play, and I'm trying to work out what we can learn about the conflict by looking at those artworks and their particular type of play.
The die that we're walking around with is actually something quite different, isn't it? It's something about applying almost the rules of the board game to the city.
That's right.
To, as you said yourself, kind of disrupts your choice of routes.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about how that's been developing.
Well, I actually, you asked me earlier about how I got specifically to the dice, and there is a precursor to this, which is a game I made up in 2009, so 2 years before the walks, where I found an old Monopoly board from before 1967, so the late 50s. And the Monopoly board in Israel till today has the whole of the country. And that early board from before 67 already had areas that were conquered in 67.
Right.
So I found that fascinating because it was... I developed a... I took it and took out some of it, some of the utilities, and I added settlements and checkpoints, which are basically a new addition in that space, in that terrain. And then all I had to do was make the pawns color-coded, so they correspond to the colors of IDs that people carry in the area. I knew from sort of research, and I've worked on it with a human rights lawyer, that not everyone is allowed to go everywhere, because if they live in a certain part of the Palestinian territories, they can't access other parts of the Palestinian territories, and they can't access Jewish parts of Israel, and on it goes. So that game became basically a sort of a very accurate description of who's allowed to go where and when. Mm-hmm. So every time you land with your colored pawn on one of the squares, it tells you what you're supposed to do, what you're allowed to do, and what you're not allowed to do. And that introduced really the cards and the dice, if you like. So, because there was an element of luck there. Three or four players, up to six players of that Monopoly game, which was called Hegemonopoly, the rule of the strong, would get their color by chance, because they would throw a die and that would tell them which color pawn they would get.
That's pretty much what life's about.
Exactly. So that introduced the whole element of luck and what you, you know, this throw of the die thing, which obviously I didn't invent. You know, there's lots of stuff written about
which
it.
Which you've appropriated.
But that's good for that purpose. Yeah.
But that also has links to the whole process of where you were doing it.
It's about appropriation. Yes, that's right. A lot of appropriation
going on. I think that was sounds like a fair thing. Should we try and walk around the edge?
Yeah, great. So that introduced the dice and the cards. And so from there, we got to the seven walks and, the different sort of themes, if you like, on the dice.
Shall we throw the dice again here? We've got a nice...
Have a nice time here.
Portrait.
Yeah. It's interesting. What would portrait be? Because when I was walking around Jerusalem, portrait was portraits of people. And then since then, that project sort of grew and grew, and there's now other sort of things that came out of that project. Most recently a book. And that book became basically, for me, a metaphoric portrait of the city. Because it's photographs from many more walks than the seven walks. I mean, it's got a few from the seven walks, but mostly the hundreds, literally, of photos, which are designed as a handheld walk in a book of the city. And I think of it as a portrait, my portrait of the city.
So how did you meet Helen Stratford, and how did you come to play the city with her?
We met on a project for Cambridge, Curiosity and Imagination, which is, we both live in Cambridge, and we are working with children to see how they play in contemporary art spaces in order to sort of try and work out how we might, or how the galleries that we are working with might attract family audiences. The assumption was that children interact with contemporary art in an unmediated way, in a very playful way, and that maybe we could sort of harness some of that playfulness, and that they could sort of pass it on to their parents and make them less inhibited and less worried about playing in those spaces, which can be quite alienating. So we did that project, which is called Children Take the Lead, and did a lot of stuff to do with play, devised games and scores. We ended up going on a residency for a week in Peterborough with a company, a sort of art organization called Metal, and we developed a little, very short clip that had playful instructions designed for the city square in Peterborough, which we projected one evening at the end of that residency. And really, it all sort of came about from there. So we got ourselves the name Play the City, Now or Never, and the rest is history.
The rest is history.
we've now got our grant.
Now, okay, so you've
developed it into an app.
Fantastic. Is that an Arts Council grant?
Yes.
Okay, and this is for something you're going to develop for children, families, adults only?
We'll work with very mixed groups, so we'll work with families on Sundays and elderly people and and adults and whoever we can sort of lure into this. We've walked with groups of people and offered very low-tech sort of handheld prompts to play or games or just do an activity that's playful. And we would like to develop the actual prompts with people.
Can you recommend a couple of walks for people to try?
I've become quite an advocate of this idea of limiting a walk and setting out parameters for a walk.
Of which maybe
there are
five choices and a wild card.
Yes, that's right.
Yep.
Just as a way of sort of... I've just become a great believer in the fact that, you know, once you restrict things, they become richer.
Yeah.
Or they have, you know, potential to become to deliver something unexpected. So I would just say, walk anywhere, anytime, but set yourself some sort of restriction. Turn only left, turn only right.
What about
backwards every 5 minutes?
What if people want to get hold of your diary?
Oh, yeah, they're very welcome to. I think I'll have it on the website. There are 40 of them. I made a limited edition. But if I sell all 40, I'll have enough money to make some more.
Yes.
So no problem there.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. In this episode, you've heard from Idit Nathan. If you have any views on the interview or on any walking issues, we would love to hear from you. Just follow the links on the Talking Walking website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. Written, recorded and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities Limited, our artwork is designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music is composed by Simon Saunders of Easytronic.